Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the undarkened corridors of power, and we shine a light ahead of us on the path where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together, really, to address problems instead of defending positions. We have another purpose, too, and that is to provide context at a time when the content can be contradictory, confusing, and overwhelming, and polarized. I just read an op-ed piece yesterday in New York Times that suggests that the two political polarities in this country are as intractably divided as the Israelis and the Palestinians. You know, it's amazing how much truth there is in comedy. For years, Swami has said, if we want peace in the Middle East, we must first have peace in the Middle West. So that's very true. As my colleague Bruce Lipton points out, when we're adrenalized by anger and outrage, we go into fight or flight. In other words, our energy flows from our cerebral cortex, the front of our brain, to our hindbrain, to our reptile brain. We become more reactive, less creative. And when we're in a political climate where outrage against the other is carefully and continually cultivated, we become downright stupid. Now, you know, many progressives can easily see how the stupidization process has led to Donald Trump as president. However, what many progressives cannot necessarily see is that their own blind outrage has also fueled the flames of misunderstanding, taken us further from the awareness we will collectively need to overgrow our current corrupt political, new word, situation. So here's a quote, considered the quote from the New York Times piece yesterday on our culture of contempt by Arthur C. Brooks. He's of the American Enterprise Institute. Quote, this outrage industrial complex works by catering to just one ideological side, creating a species of addiction by feeding our desire to believe that we are completely right and that the other side is made up of knaves and fools. It strokes our own biases while affirming our worst assumptions about those who disagree with us. The good news is there are some really, really excellent tools available for we the people to not just listen to and hear one another, but to collaborate on bringing forth breakthrough solutions and political climate change. This week's show is about one such tool. In Spontaneous Evolution, Bruce Lipton and I, in our chapter Healing the Body Politic, explored what James Surowiecki called the wisdom of crowds and Tom Attlee calls co-intelligence, as we offer example after example of how ordinary people can access extraordinary wisdom. One of the specific examples we gave was the work of our guest today, Jim Ruff. He was the author of Society's Breakthrough, Releasing Essential Wisdom and Virtue in the People. He's the developer of dynamic facilitation and an exciting strategy that grew out of dynamic facilitation called the Wisdom Council process that has been practiced widely around the world and has actually been incorporated into the constitutions of two states in Austria. So our conversation today I find very exciting because it will help us see how we can turn these polarized magnetic poles into a dynamo to help us emerge into a broader understanding and toward breakthrough solutions. So welcome, Jim.
Well, great. Thank you. Appreciate it, Steve.
Well, let's jump right in here. Your book is called Society's Breakthrough. Let's start there. What is this potential breakthrough that you write about?
Well, in 1993, it occurred to me. I mean, it actually grew out of my seminars I teach. I teach a seminar in dynamic facilitation, which is really about solving impossible to solve problems and staying creative and collaborative and so forth. And often the groups would come up with this similar answers, similar breakthroughs, and I just put them together, really, and with dynamic facilitation. So if we could just facilitate this small group into this high quality of thinking, where they're facing problems together and coming up with breakthrough answers, and they finish with unity and everybody likes one another, the breakthrough is a specific way that we might do that for the whole system. We just really need to go down to Radio Shack, if they're still there, and get some kind of turbocharge to what we're doing with the small group and have it affect the whole system. And I have a specific strategy for how to do that.
Well, you know, I have to tell the audience that a number of years ago, 10 or 12 years ago, you came down from your home in Port Townsend, Washington, to our place in Santa Rosa, California. You led a small group weekend through this process of wisdom counsel using the dynamic facilitation. And I have to say that it was jaw-dropping how everyone in the group had all of their ideas represented. So to give the listeners an idea, walk us through this dynamic facilitation process as it applies to this wisdom council designed to glean extraordinary wisdom from quote-unquote ordinary people.
Yeah. Well, the nature of our thinking process, so I'm going to back up a little bit, but our sure. thinking process, that you and I were born into a system, and that system sort of dictates a thinking process. We call it decision-making. And we have a collective decision-making system, and out pops policy at the end. And that system of thinking is really adversarial. So it's not about the people in the system so much as it is the system itself enforces that adversarial thinking process. And we stand detached. We use our judgment. Ideally, this is what the founders hoped, is that we would be rational in our decision process, that we would be neutral and objective. And of course, we don't do that, but that's what the hope was. And the whole design is set up really for us to just make this decision and go back to work or go back to our own personal lives. And what is missing is a quality of thinking that you and I know at times in our life where we're facing the problem that's really big in our lives. I don't know, a personal illness, a real struggle at work, something where we're all just kind of put aside our roles and our normal egocentric ways of being, and we just kind of pitch in to figure out what's best for everybody, and we all do our best to come up with that. And in the process, we have insights and breakthroughs, and we end up making progress more through creativity than through reason or through judgment. And as you know, you can't have judgment and creativity in the same room. So it's really a change in thinking. And that's what dynamic facilitation does, is it really holds to the idea of helping people stay out of decision-making and into what I've given it a term, I call it choice creating. Not that we create lots of choices and then make the decision. No, I mean it in the sense of we're all talking and we're thinking, and there's a clarity that emerges that we all just know what to do. And we've co-created the choice, and we feel energy going forward about what to do about it. And we feel excited about our new relationship with other people, because we wouldn't have had the breakthrough without those people being different. So dynamic facilitation is really aimed at choice creating. And the way it does that is we use four charts, basically, in front of the room, and everybody sits kind of in a half circle facing the charts. And the DFer, the dynamic facilitator, holds the space in a way that no matter what anybody says, they are protected. And we try and help people get more and more authentic, just say what's really on their mind. And it's okay if it's judgmental or whatever. That's okay, because the DFer will shape it so that it isn't judgmental. It isn't received that way. So, and we the charts are basic. They're just like data and solutions and problem statements and concerns. And when people speak, we put them into those different charts in a way that everything anybody says is heard, but by the others, and the person feels heard. But the key is that the spirit is that we're never in a spirit of judgment. It's always in a spirit of evolving forward, feeling the shifts and breakthroughs, making headway in that way.
You know, you're also taking two of the very well-known creative processes. One, of course, is brainstorming, and the other is improvisational comedy. And one of the keys in improvisational comedy is you always say yes. And the same is true with
yes.
brainstorming. You don't contradict. You simply add to. So what I remember is that, as you just said, everyone in the room, no matter what they say, everything that they say gets put into the hopper, gets put on the board, so that no communication is ignored, no communication is dismissed, no communication is challenged, except by somebody saying, well, I want to put this up as a question or a problem or a solution.
Yes.
Go ahead.
The tie-in with improv comedy is really one that's struck me many times, actually. It's absolutely right. There's always a going with whatever person is saying. Brainstorming is a little different. I used to in my seminars have a section on brainstorming, just to force people to get out of their thinking zone and realize how creative they are. But in the dynamic facilitation, we don't actually do brainstorming, because brainstorming is kind of an off the top of the head form of creativity, blah, blah, blah. And what we're really wanting is to have people be drawing that creativity kind of with a heartfelt sense, saying what's really on their mind, what's really going on, what the heart of it is, and discovering these shifts in that way. Brainstorming is always, even though it's, you can say anything you want, you're still brainstorming uses of a brick. You know, it's still contained, and isn't really getting out of the box.
And this way, there's nothing that's really outside the circle. It's all inside the circle. It's all inside the container. I want to
well,
focus
in brainstorming,
on a specific,
but in, yeah, yeah. In
brainstorming, no, I mean inside the inside, but, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but in dynamic facilitation and choice creating, we often end up with an entirely different sense of the problem than what we started with.
Can you give us an example of that? How a problem can evolve from how it's first formulated to something more helpful?
Well, okay. I mean, you have a connection with Santa Cruz, and we did a wisdom council there. Wisdom Council, the first one, where the and I hope I don't misrepresent what all would happen, but there's a rail corridor in the county, and it was apparently they bought it a number of years ago, 10 or 15 years ago, and there has been an awesome fight ever since where the political structures are going back and forth and back and forth, and the people, we randomly selected some people to meet for a day and a half, and, you know, largely they didn't really even know anymore what the fight was about. They were kind of had sort of lost track of it. But in the Wisdom Council process, of they did get a chance to hear a little bit about what the issue was, and the issue was kind of boiled down to two options. Do we leave it a trail, or do we add a, is there a rail there and a trail? And that, and boy, you can't believe how upset these groups became, and there was a lot of money being involved and so forth. But so we randomly select citizens, and the citizens started looking at the issue, and their really breakthrough, to me, the central breakthrough was, hey, this really isn't even, why is this being decided in the realm of the transportation committee? It's really, this is really about our whole community defining itself and what kind of community we are, and it really should be a process that involves everybody, and we should be thinking about it not in terms so much of transportation, but in terms of what our community stands for and how innovative we are, and so they reshaped the whole nature of the problem. Unfortunately, it was about 2 days before the Transportation Committee made their decision. But my guess is these ideas are going to carry on and could actually turn things around, where the people start realizing, hey, this is really doesn't even belong in this bailiwick, you know. So anyway, that's a good example.
We're about to take a short break. We'll be back with Jim Ruff talking about Wisdom Council's dynamic facilitation, Society's Breakthrough. Steve Behrman, WikiPoliticky.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay.
911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Okay, this is Steve Behrman. I'm talking with Jim Ruff. We're talking about the Wisdom Councils, which is really designed to cultivate and proliferate and clarify the wisdom in the room. And I really like the idea that you brought up, that in the process of this conversation, you can discover that the problem you were looking at needs a different frame. And it's interesting, in the course of – you said that this was a very divisive issue. How did the divisiveness express itself in that group, or did it dissipate rather quickly?
Well, in the group itself, in the random group, and they had a real struggle actually getting the random group because it was done over Christmas and they tried to pull it together. But in the group itself, there wasn't much of a problem. There was one guy who was really, really hot on trains and stuff, but what they basically came to was this idea that, hey, let's just make it a trail, and then if the train thing, we'll see how it develops and then add the train. That was kind of what they were saying. But and they said that it turns out there's some money that could be $11 million, I think, that could be come from the state government if they keep the rail. But their point was, hey, this is an investment. Let's just push that aside. And so, so it wasn't in the group itself that the conflict showed itself. But when they walked on stage and presented, we didn't have a normal audience. Normally, you want to present to all the people. Mm-hmm. And in this case, we didn't have all the people. We had two camps.
Yeah, and a bunch of families. But they sit on different – yeah. Yeah. Were they on different sides of the room and so on?
Yes. It was a new experience for me. I'd never seen, you know, it was really, I've never done anything like that before. So I learned a whole lot. And basically, the core learning for me is that the Wisdom Council, I need to help the Wisdom Council not so much present their result, but to present the story of progress and the breakthroughs they had along the way to get to the result. Because you don't want the Wisdom Council to pretend they're experts now telling people, the experts in the room, what's going on, because they're not experts. But they have a story to tell, and they represent what the public really – this is how it's going to go. If you randomly select another public, you're probably going to get a similar path. So the two audiences in the room can – realize, oh, this is the way the people are going to think about it if we engage them in a way that really is open-minded and open-hearted. So anyway, that was my huge learning for this. I'd never had a situation where the group just presented in such a polarized audience before.
The audience wasn't prepared the way the people who are in the group actually had, maybe for them, a life-changing experience where they saw how ideas can develop into something constructive and woven. And then, of course, they gave the answer to the problem, but they didn't say, how did you solve that problem? One of my favorite stories from your Society's Breakthrough book, which we used in Spontaneous Evolution, had to do with a very actually a short event that you did. It wasn't very a long event. With people who are on opposite sides of the abortion issue. So sure. I found that to be very interesting. Why don't you reiterate that story and of how the kinds of conclusions that this group of people who were polarized, what they came to out of that polarization?
Yeah, well, I think it was at a conference or some kind of a I was in a class situation, I guess, and so it was really almost a demonstration. And the group found an issue they were polarized about, and it was an abortion. And so we only had, I forget, 45 minutes or 50 minutes or something. So, but anyway, once you hold the charts up, and no matter what anybody says, it's going to be okay. So first thing out the door is this statement about pro-life or pro-choice. I forget which one it was, you know. So that goes up on the solution chart, you know. Okay, so we make a law that prohibits abortions, blah, 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 you know, whatever. And you have that person express themselves fully. And then the other people can hardly hold themselves and they have concerns or whatever. And so you write, and they have you know, objections, but they get framed as concerns. And then they say their answer, which is the pro-choice position, and we write that up as solution number two. And then, but then there's kind of, they're so used to the situation that we live in is so structured that to have those oppositional contests, you know, and so, but soon people were just starting to think again. They have the two answers up there and they got their concerns listed and there's kind of a blank spot. And then people would start saying, well, how many abortions are there anyway? And, you know, they've shifted into some kind of zone of curiosity instead of this zone of advocacy. And then, you know, people start talking like that. And then all of a sudden they really came to their conclusion was, we're working on the wrong problem. This isn't about laws. This is really about how do we all come together. Nobody is interested in kids being born into families that don't want and love them, for one thing. So how do we assure that every child that's conceived is born into a family that wants and loves them? And that became the new problem statement. And, you know, as we finished out the session with everybody kind of coming up with different ideas about how that could happen. And it doesn't really involve laws. I mean, maybe laws fit in there somewhere, but it's not how you would solve the problem if you were to really work on the problem. But that's how our system directs us toward policy. And we go back and forth and back and forth, waste all our time.
You know, this is so interesting because for a long time, it's been clear to me that the less trust and the less community, the more laws seem like they're necessary. And we legislate things that used to be by a handshake, that used to be by, well, you're a member of the community, we know where you live. If you cheat your customers, everybody's going to know that. And so when things are local and people know one another, then these things can be worked out without having to create laws and coercion. On a larger scale, I certainly have the belief, and I've there's a very interesting book that I read in called Wedged, which is by Eric Fogg about these wedge issues that do very little but empower the polarity and help one side or another get donations and stay in existence. And I interviewed Eric on WikiPolitiki, and he said that when you get people together to actually discuss these intractable issues, seemingly impossible polarities like abortion, you find out that there is a general consensus that abortion should be legal with certain restrictions, and that the general public is willing to go along with that. However, the various sides who have an interest in having it be only this way or all this way or all that way continue to create this ongoing struggle rather than wasting energy doing that, it can be much more easily solved if we get away from that legalism and relying on laws. I mean, maybe eventually there will have to be laws, but they can be based on the consensus that people come to in these kinds of wisdom councils. So I want to shift the conversation to some of the work that you've done internationally in having, you know, it said in your bio that a couple of states in Austria have adopted this process. So tell us a bit about that and how they're using the dynamic facilitation and the wisdom council process.
Okay, I want to get to that. I want to comment a little bit on what you said, too, because it looks like it's about less trust, and we get out of local, and we have less ability, so we need to rely on laws. It looks a lot like that. But to me, what is really missing is the kind of conversation that if you and I could facilitate the kind of conversation that I call choice creating. So like your guest said, discuss the intractable issues. To me, the word discuss implies a certain kind of conversation that is one kind of it's like we don't have a sensitivity to the kind of conversation that makes up a we the people conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the secret ingredient to solving climate change. That's the secret ingredient to solving our national struggle, is that if you and I can facilitate a regular occurrence, it only has to be a little bit of choice, whole system choice creating, so that we're also stepping back and saying, hey, what's going on? How are we doing? Are we happy with our system? Are we okay with the way things are going? Is this a good system for us? That conversation is missing in our global situation. It's missing in our national situation. It's missing in our local situation. And it has to occur. There's no way we can have collective intelligence without that stepping back, thinking consciously together as a whole system about what we really want for our children and our lives, and how do we get there? How do we work together to get there? We've been left with this competitive zone. That's all we've got. We don't have a we the people anymore. So you and I got born into their system of the 18th century, and so we're trying to do the best we can, but it's a struggle, I'm telling you. And our nonprofit, the Center for Wise Democracy, which wisedemocracy.org, is about how do we do that at the global level, at the national level. Now, our best example, jumping to where you asked, so far, our best credential is what's happened in Austria. And that's where governments have picked up on this. And governments are acting on this. We don't need governments to do it. And in fact, I think governments might not be the best place. It really should be you and I, with enough money, with enough media, with enough networking support, we can facilitate this, we the people, all the people, using the Wisdom Council process at the global level, at the national level, we can facilitate this whole system leap in collective intelligence and shift in paradigm and shift of economic system. And in other words, we're not going to change our we're not going to deal with climate change until we don't just rely on solutions within the existing system. We have to transform the system, and that's what we can do. Now, in Europe, there are governments, which is really, 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 really cool, and it's really heroic people that have made this happen. Manfred Hellwinkel is one, and I mean, a lot of people. And so, but they have advocated for the Wisdom Council process in government, and it's worked like gangbusters. But the working is a little bit limited because the elected officials don't actually want there to be a we the people. So honestly, the people aren't all that involved. The elected officials have been using it more primarily to have them get a special communication of what the people really want. And then it really helps the elected officials to converse with one another a lot better. They, for instance, will, on a Friday afternoon, they'll all meet in the foyer of their building, and they'll sit at tables with one another, and the Wisdom Council, these random citizens, walk on stage, and they talk about the problem, and they talk about the strategy, the solutions they came up with, and then the elected officials talk, and they are sharing with one another in a collaborative way that they don't normally do, and so they absolutely love it. And it's also providing leadership from the people to the elected officials, because the people are saying things like, around the immigration issue or the refugee issue, hey, our number one thing here is to be compassionate with these people. Number two is, yeah, sure, we want to protect ourselves. But number one is to be compassionate. And you know, the elected officials are looking around and saying, I could never have said that. Nobody here could have said that. So it's tremendous value being used by government. But honestly, the real value is where we the people, you and I, facilitate an actual we the people that can be, say, no, we don't want to trash the planet. Let's not do that. Let's design systems and provide leadership to government about not doing that.
you know, our system tends to keep us out of those conversations. It tends to keep us in polarized conversations, which are facilitated by mainstream media. And so in our final segment, I want to talk more about what this might look like. We could walk through the process of if we actually had a national wisdom council. You and I talked about starting with a California wisdom council, what a national one would be like. I want to get one distinction just a little bit more clear for my listeners, and that is the distinction between decision-making and that other word I use, discussion, and what you call choice creating. So say something more about that distinction.
Well, decision making, I mean, the root for the word is decision, means cut away. It's a judgment. The ideal, you have a number of options and you select one and the other options go away. It's not a creative process. It's a judging process. It's a weighing, and deliberation is a weigh, means to weigh. And discussion means to bang together. I mean, those are the roots words.
Percussion, discussion. I like it.
Yes, exactly right. Concussion. Yeah, it means bang. So we're not, we don't want to have those conversations. I mean, those are, no, they all have a place. They all have a place. But what I want to do is point to the one that is the essential missing ingredient and then structure a situation where we reliably evoke choice creating as the conversation, and then we structure a way to make that resonant throughout the whole system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we got to do. Now, the choice creating, the root for choice, or one of the roots anyway, is to taste. It's like it's a bodily thing. We're talking and we're coming up with, in this heartfelt, creative way, we're coming up with the choice that we know, all look around and realize, hey, we're all together on this. Okay, we'll all do it. Now we can step out of choice creating and just figure out who does what, you know. But so it's to me, there's two worlds, decision-making, choice creating. Decision-making is fine. Maybe we do that 98% of the time, but there's got to be this stepping back and thinking in the spirit of choice creating. What do we want? How are we? Are we okay? We're checking inside ourselves. We're looking in deeply. We're appreciating what others are saying because they're looking and they have a window into truth also. And we need to hear from all these voices. So
it's a non-linear way of approaching an issue, and that's the way to get things that are not on the table. On the table.
Yes.
We'll be back with our final segment with Jim Ruff talking about the wisdom councils. This is Steve Behrman, Wiki Politiki, back after these messages.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network, presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Okay, well, we're back in a very interesting and I think very generative and hopeful conversation with Jim Ruff about the potential for the Wisdom Councils to be a way for us to essentially find out what people think and feel and cultivate more choices rather than the polarizing, are you with us or against us? So let's look at what if we had a national Wisdom Council in this country? How might that work?
Well, it's something you and I could do. What we would do is we'd first of all give us $1 million or $2 million or something, and we would randomly select 10 to 16 citizens and something like that, and we'd bring them together in a location, and we would dynamically facilitate them for 2 or 3 days on some issue, and the issue we might go to I don't know who, some media sponsor to pick the issue or some, someone can choose the issue, really. And it doesn't have to be a defined issue. It could just be, immigration, or it can be, the wall, or it can be, environmental change or something. And then this group is dynamically facilitated for a couple days, 2 or 3 days, and they will reach unity, and they'll be excited about it. They'll have a story to tell, and then they walk on stage, and hopefully you and I have run around and assembled a bunch of celebrities and people interested in. We have a media co-sponsor, and they would walk on stage, and in about a half hour they would share the issue and their thought process, and the unity that they reached, and they would. They're done, really. And now everybody turns their chairs and talks, and we have cameras walking around, say, and listening to what people are saying. People that are, I think celebrities would be good because you draw attention. But and what we're finding is that because this Wisdom Council is thinking in the spirit of choice grading, and they come up with unity, and we have a randomly selected group, so we're getting pretty much everybody as a symbolic in the room, as a symbol, and pretty much the whole room goes, why aren't we doing that? A, and B, they start adding things. They start talking in a similar spirit to choice creating. They aren't talking in the yes, no, agree, disagree thing. They're talking in the trying to figure out how to add to this and make it more. And then in a month or so, we randomly select a new group, and they pick the same issue or a different issue, and they take it forward, another step, totally different group. And what we're doing is that by doing this, you and I are using the Wisdom Council, which is a symbol of everyone. We randomly select. We do our damnedest to get a random group. They come to unity. They speak. And it's like a hero's journey. It's a heroic symbol of all of us encountering this issue, reaching unity, and then the next time a new group takes it forward another step. So what that group is doing is that they are essentially facilitating a whole system conversation. Mm. So that, okay, maybe some people aren't paying attention, maybe lots of people, but at the beginning, if anybody talks about the results, if anybody looks at the results, mm-hmm. if anybody reads about the results, they're in the conversation. And so we are generating a whole system conversation that's also, it's an alternative. It's a different, it's added on to the existing political conversation, but this one's different. This is where we really talk and we really figure out what we all really want. And it's outside of the usual battleground.
Now, if we pair...
idea, Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, what happens is that it's actually a system transformation because it offers us a chance to re-enliven the we the people. And when you have a real we the people somehow in the system, that's like democracy. I mean, now all of a sudden we're not just having this battle between well-heeled special interests. We're having this voice of we the people talking coherently and reasonably. And so it's a transformation of our governance process from whatever it is we have, which we call democracy, to actual democracy, which I call wise democracy.
You know, a couple of very interesting things here. First of all, you say that these groups come to unity. That's pretty remarkable. Do you ever have it not come to unity? I mean, how does, you know?
Only once did it ever happen so far for me. I don't know. Other people may have had it, but I'll tell you that way what that was. It was at a conference. It was at a spiritual conference, you know, where they have all the different religions. I forgot what they call it. Anyway, lots of different religions, and in Austria, in Graz, near Graz. And so the first thing anybody said was, I don't want to have a meeting. Oh, we were in a monastery way up in the hills. And the one guy said, somebody said, I don't want to have a meeting with somebody being tortured right behind me. And what he was talking about was the crucifix.
Ah.
So that started the meeting.
A polarizing statement. They wanted to crucify him for saying that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, it worked out really, really well. But the difficulty wasn't that. The difficulty was that we had a woman who, I think she had a psychological break of some kind. She would say something and then not acknowledge that she had just said that. And so we went round and round about what to do. And the group of 11, anyway, we worked something out and worked great anyway. We had a group of 11 speak, and then one woman spoke for 2 minutes or 3 minutes or something. And because she couldn't, there's nothing, no way. And anyway, it worked out great. And what they basically said, by the way, the conclusion was, hey, all our symbology is from the Middle Ages. It's all old. We need to update our religious symbols in some way, all of us. And it was very powerful. They presented them to the conference as a whole, and it was really, really powerful, I thought.
You know, I think that's really interesting. The most interesting thing about this is that we don't even realize how strictly the conversations are managed by the system the way it is. And it's this or that, just like in the election of 2016. You know, as I was traveling around the country, my question to people was, so who are you voting against? You know, and that was really how people made their decisions. I think she's worse than he is. I think he's worse than she is. And so that was the conversation. Yeah. It wasn't even chocolate or vanilla, but do you prefer dog duty or horse crap? You know, so it's kind of like that. And so this is really a breakthrough because it actually creates, as you would say, a holistic conversation where the entire system, people can begin to, in ruminating about things and in the safety of a room like this where everything gets put up on the board, nobody gets dismissed for what they're saying, it all gets put into the soup that everybody is looking at. It's always up on the board. They can look at the whiteboard over there at the solutions or the questions or any of these things and recognize that nothing that is ever said, quote unquote, dies or disappears. It's always in the mix. So nobody is dismissed by that. And so this is really something that must happen. You know, I'm also working on a project called National
Let me emphasize what you just said, Steve. You just said this is something that must happen. I believe that. I don't see how we solve climate change without this happening at the global level. I don't see how it's possible to have a system that's structured from corporations, or take our people, put them in organizations that are maximizing self-interest, and then run around and say we're solving this problem by setting up, fighting for legislation or new technologies or spiritual warrior or local this, local that. I'm sorry, that's not going to be enough. We have to change the actual system of thinking, and that's what this process can do. And all those other things are great, but they don't touch the system.
Well, exactly, and that they're not supposed to touch the system. What they're supposed to do is keep the system in place while people are diverted into ultimately frustrating and some would say meaningless conversations, because they don't really – when people are – let's talk about the abortion issue that we talked about earlier. When we have people who hold these things so strongly that the only way they will ever be satisfied is that if their side wins and the other side loses, that may be perhaps 15 to 20% of the population. So those are the kinds of people that control the conversation, rather than when we get people together from different sides and rehumanize rather than dehumanize by listening to one another and creating different rules of engagement, then it is possible for these new ideas to sprout and emerge. The other institution I'm working very closely on cultivating is something called the National Town Square, which would be an independent institution and society where everyone who registers for it would be able to have a voice and a vote that would be totally verifiable. It would be an advisory vote. And I can see that once these groups of people come together around various issues, and I like the idea of presenting it to the larger group and then have that group, like in the cafe, World Cafe, writing things on the tabletop, where that group can further refine and amplify. And then these policies, perhaps, or ideas that groups of citizens come up with in this choice-creating process can then be presented to the people at large to vote on as something they want to vote up the pop charts, and then present that to legislators and say, well, 100 million Americans think that this is a good idea. It makes it easier
What you've done there, Steve, is that you've made this choice creating subservient to the normal decision making. And to me, it's got to be the other way around, that the we the people is all of us. It's not a vote. It doesn't end up a vote. Voting, to me, is making our – if we can design all kinds of better ways to make our current system better, but it's still our current system. It's still our current system. We can get rid of all the corruption. We can get rid of the – we can have the voting be, proportional, whatever, stepwise. But we can't – it's still a voting system. Voting by itself is a judgment process that – it is where you have to be separate from – there's a separation that happens, subject-object separation that happens there, where I sit separate from what's going on and I judge. That's great. It's a good way, fast way to make decisions. But we have to also have the choice-creating quality of we the people, where we're – that's the real life. Real life has to shift from – this idea of voting to this idea where even though we only do a little bit of it, in terms of percent, but it's the real life. It's like we step back from life and we look at one another and we're talking from the heart and we're trying to find what's best. And the only possible answer is when we reach unity. That is a different kind of thinking. The other stuff about voting and everything, all that's inside the box. That we have to transcend.
Even if it's an advisory vote, even if it's something
advisory vote, yeah. No, to me, the advisory thing is an entirely different thing.
So how would these conversations impact the climate change issue, for example, without turning it into a policy?
Yes. One of the things I notice about people when they talk about climate change, they tell you about their solution strategy, and they are exasperated because they can't. There's no way to get it to happen, and they say we need to, and then whatever it is, there's we need to pass carbon tax, a global. We need to have global governance. We need to, all believe in Jesus. We need to. I don't know whatever it is. They say all have a we need to. Well, heck, if there was a we wouldn't have this problem to begin with. This is about how do we have the we, you and I, facilitate that we, the collective, all of us, thinking intelligently and wisely for the all seventh generation where we've got everybody on board. That we is the we that can do all these things. And we can be strategic about what kinds of these many solution strategies are out there and how to piece them together. And we can invent new ones and we can act coherently together. So it's about facilitating that we, and that's just, I know we're going to end quickly. But that's just the beginning. Yeah. The benefits toward climate change are just go on and on and on. How do we have it? What it means to have a shared vision? What does it mean to have a collective consciousness? What does it mean to have a new paradigm of thinking, et cetera?
I think that's really an excellent, excellent place to end. That idea of coming to unity, it reminds me of how the Native Americans make their decisions. And I've heard, sit around in a circle and talk and talk and talk until there's nothing left but the obvious truth. So that may be the way that we... shift us. Thank you so much, Jim Ruff, for talking with us today on Wiki Politiki. He can be found at wisedemocracy.org. Steve Behrman, I'll be back next week